सुखं दरति दुष्पारं ज्ञानं व्यसनात्मकम् Shreya Sam,
of
all benedictions, in this world, Sarve Sham, every person, Dhyanam, knowledge, Nishreya Sam, supreme benefit, Param, transcendental, Sukham, happiness, Tarati, crosses over, Paduspara, insurmountable, Jnana, knowledge, no, boat, Vyasana, danger, Arnavam, ocean. Translation: in this material world, there are different types of achievements, but of all of them, the achievement of knowledge is considered to be the highest, because one can cross the ocean of nescience only on the boat of knowledge. Otherwise, the ocean is impassable. From an action, everyone is suffering within this material world due to ignorance. Every day we see that a person without knowledge commits some criminal act and is later arrested and punished, despite the fact that he actually may not have been conscious of a sinful activity. Such ignorance prevails throughout the world. People do not consider how they are risking their lives in an attempt to have illicit sex life, kill animals to satisfy the tongue, enjoy intoxication, and gamble. It is very regrettable that the leaders of the world do not know the effects of these sinful activities. They are instead taking things very easily and are succeeding in making the ocean missions wider and wider. Opposed to such ignorance, full knowledge is the greatest achievement within this material world. It can practically see that one who has sufficient knowledge is saved from any dangerous pitfalls of life. That's it in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagunam, Jamanamam, Yanamam, when one actually becomes wise and surrenders under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Vasudeva, Sarvamiji, Samahatma, Sudurlabha, such a great soul is very rarely to be found. This Krishna consciousness movement is determined to open wide the eyes of the so-called leaders who are full of ignorance and thus save them from the many pitfalls and dangerous conditions of life. The greatest danger is the danger of getting a body lower than that of a human being. It was with great difficulty that we attained this human form of life, just to take advantage of his body and establish a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. Lord Shiva advises, however, that those who take advantage of his prayers will very soon become devotees of Lord Vasudeva, and thus will be able to cross the ocean of nations and make life perfect. Text 76. Although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God and worshiping Him are very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads the stoka composed and sung by me, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Further, it is especially significant that Lord Shiva is a devotee of Lord Vasudeva, Vaishnavana, Yatha, Sambhu. Among all Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the most. Constantly, Lord Shiva has a Sampradaya and a Vaishnava civil succession called the Rudra Sampradaya. At that present moment, those who belong to the Vishnu Sangha Sampradaya of Vaishnavas come from Rudra, Lord Shiva. To become a devotee of Lord Krishna Vasudeva is very, very difficult. The word especially used in this connection is Durarajam. The worship of the demigods is not very difficult, but becoming a devotee of Lord Vasudeva Krishna is not so easy. However, if one adheres to the principles and follows in the footsteps of the higher authorities as advised by Lord Shiva, one can very easily become a devotee of Lord Vasudeva. This is also confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj. Devotional service cannot be practiced by a mental speculator. Devotional service is a special attainment which can be acquired only by a person who has surrendered under a pure devotee. As confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, Mahiya Sampado Rajo Visekha Miskinshanam Navranita Yavat. Unless one accepts the dust of those feet of a pure devotee who is free from all material contaminations, one cannot enter into the devotional service of the Lord. Translation: in this material world, there are different types of achievement, but of all of them, achievement of knowledge is considered to be the highest, because one can cross the ocean of nations only on the boat of knowledge, otherwise the ocean is impassable. Although rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worshiping Him is very difficult, if one vibrates or simply reads the stotra composed and sung by me, he will very easily be able to invoke the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the first verse is a glorification of knowledge, something like what we find in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 4, where Krishna says, on this boat of knowledge you can cross over ignorance, and therefore Arjuna armed with knowledge fight. So this, of course, is a common statement in the scriptures: knowledge destroys ignorance, and that's obvious. In the normal context, this means that by jnana yoga, one overcomes ignorance. Karma yoga ultimately doesn't give it ignorance, because it only leads you in sattva-guna, which is, we can say, a mixture of vidya and avidya. And there's some proportions. When we get to vidya, then we come to jnana. So, jnana, however, is famous for destroying ignorance and destroying karma and ultimately giving you liberation from the material world. But in this context, we cannot take that type of meaning, because, as I see, the next verse talks about reciting the prayers of Lord Shiva, which are not that jnana, but simply about Brahman or Atma, but actually those verses are about knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So that type of jnana is different from the jnana when we talk about jnana yoga, which is Atma jnana or Brahma jnana. The jnana is also there in bhakti, but it is different, so we call that Bhagavad jnana or Sambandha jnana, etc. So that is what is meant here. He's not glorifying knowledge of Brahman, he's glorifying knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So that type of knowledge is different. Jnana yoga knowledge gives you Brahman liberation. Bhagavad jnana gives you bhakti and ultimately prema. So there is a difference in the two types of knowledge. So therefore, sometimes when we see the word knowledge glorified in the scripture, it does not mean Brahma jnana, it actually means bhakti. It's the highest knowledge also. So we should not become confused by these terms. Just as jnana destroys ignorance, so bhakti destroys ignorance. So one of the first effects of bhakti is klesha gni, to destroy suffering. And suffering is caused by ignorance, desires, and karmas. Ultimately by ignorance, or avidya. So bhakti destroys avidya as well. So not only jnana destroys, that is Brahma jnana, not only that destroys ignorance, but bhakti also destroys ignorance. But bhakti does more than that. So bhakti destroys ignorance, but also produces more bhakti. So that is even more important. So of the two processes, bhakti is superior. So in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks the question, should we follow this gradual process and come up to jnana, karma yoga, and jnana yoga, sambha yoga, then bhakti yoga, just do bhakti yoga. Krishna says, just do bhakti yoga. Yeah, that includes everything. And we don't have other preliminary processes to start with. We don't need that. So each of the other processes is limited in its effects, whereas bhakti gives everything, plus more than all the other processes. So it is superior. So here, Shiva says in the second verse that with great faith, one should chant these verses to the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, who is difficult to worship. Hari is difficult to worship. But nevertheless, one can worship him through these prayers. So, why is the Lord difficult to worship? Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone can perform bhakti yoga, etc. So that is true. Great qualification is not needed to start devotional service other than faith. It does not require sattva guna or anything. One can simply start in any guna. In any condition of life. So in that sense, it's not rare. It is rare, of course, in the sense that how do we get faith? So we must get the mercy of devotees to get the faith. So in that sense, we can say it's rare. Of course, if there are many devotees and they're all giving out mercy, then of course that even that is not so rare. But the particular way in which bhakti develops is different than other processes. Jnana becomes available by developing karma yoga, etc. And we purify something from the sattva, and then naturally we have the inclination to inquire about Atma. So we get into jnana from that. Simply by doing jnana, that does not produce any bhakti of faith. So in that sense, it is rare. It does not naturally develop one thing after the other. It can only develop by the mercy of devotees. Of course, we see that one of the characteristics of bhakti is also sudurlabha. Among the six qualities of bhakti, sudurlabha is one of them. That means very difficult to attain. So there it is explained in the Nectar Devotion that why is it sudurlabha? It's sudurlabha in the sense to progress to bhava and prema. That is rare. So we can start the process, but to get to bhava, we have to go through certain steps. In other words, we go through shraddha and bhajana kriya and arjanavirti, nishtaruchi, sakti, and we get to bhava. So to progress beyond sadhana and get the result is rare. That is to have darshan of the Supreme Lord and see the Supreme Lord. That is rare. That's what we can say. Prema is rare. But if it's so rare, that means that all the devotees, most of them don't get prema, because they say, so then why should we do it? Because it's not available for everybody. So no. The other answer is that it is rare because the Supreme Lord, or the prema, depends upon the Supreme Lord, not just the sadhana. Just as bhakti does not depend upon jnana or karma to develop, it depends on mercy. So, prema also depends upon mercy. In other words, the result of bhakti also depends upon mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by his mercy, that one can advance. So, is the mercy of the Supreme Lord rare? In one sense, no, it is not rare. It is simply responds to the qualification of the devotee. That's all. So, if the devotee is sincere, then the Lord gives his mercy. Which means that one has to practice properly bhakti, and then one gets the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and one can advance nicely in devotional service. So, in that sense, it's not rare. But it means one has to follow a particular process. Serving the Vaishnavas, getting the Vaishnavas' mercy, and getting the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And then it becomes easy, in one sense. So that is why bhakti is also said to be the easy process. In chapter 9, Krishna says it's easy to get the result. Pratyashavadvam dharmyam susukam. It's easy to execute. Though it is called difficult in one sense, at the same time, because it's non-material, at the same time, it is also easy if we follow the particular process and get the mercy of devotees. So, Shiva here is giving mercy to the Prachetas, and he also gives them this particular stotra, chant. So therefore, he says that though the Lord is rarely achieved, now you can achieve him through this particular process of bhakti taught by Lord Shiva. He's giving his mercy and he's giving the particular process. Therefore, it is not so rare.
For the telling him, he had to take the accusation of devotees. Mother Prabhupada was preaching for him, preaching to him for 2-3 days, but yet Prabhupada told him, you have to take the accusation of the devotees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the first step. Of course, even to get the faith requires mercy of devotees, and after you get the faith, that only develops through sattva sankha. not independent, we don't do it on our own, but rather we get knowledge through devotees. As I said here, one needs the knowledge, but that is for Bhagavad Gyan. So how do we get that? We get that through association of devotees.
Lord Shiva is saying with great faith, and then we know that faith is not our, we cannot create faith. But Lord Shiva is saying with great faith, one recites this book. Which means this is without, beyond our prerogative.
Well, yeah, it depends on previous mercy, in other words. If one has previous mercy, we'll find the same in Bhagavad Gita. Don't preach this message to anybody except if they have faith in their devotees. So that means you can't preach Bhagavad Gita to anybody in one sense. So definitely those who don't have faith will not accept, will not understand. It'll be difficult for them. So that is why a process like this is also somewhat limited. It requires initial faith. The name does not require faith, and it has its effect even on people like Ajamil. So that's the great quality of the name of the Lord, that it actually starts with this type of namavas where they have no faith. And eventually it can lead to faith when they get a little association, devotees, etc. As in the case of Ajamil, he got the association of the Vishnu Rudras, and then he developed faith at that point.
You see the devotees, the mercy, how actually the mechanism works, like devotees, like one-to-one seeing other devotees and getting mercy, other devotees praying for him. How is the relationship?
So, usually it consists of giving knowledge. That is the main function of the devotee. He gives knowledge. The giver of knowledge.
No, how about the real knowledge means Bhagavan Jamina Mandir? What is realized?
Yeah, well, first knowledge means understanding the difference between Lord and Jiva, understanding the position of Jiva in relation to other forms of the Lord, understanding the process of bhakti. How do we achieve the Lord? How do we understand the Lord? Then we have the process of bhakti. So then we have to understand the difference between pure bhakti and mixed bhakti, and worship of devatas, how that's different. So we have to understand the process of bhakti. We have to understand Supreme Lord is Bhagavan and Swayam Bhagavan. We have to understand the relationship with Brahman and Paramatma to Bhagavan also. So all of that is knowledge.
Well, some may argue that knowledge can be even not leading to a purpose, right?
In one sense, yes. We can get some knowledge that way. But again, there's always questions which are unclear. So many people have questions about things and they can't understand what this means or that means, or then they miss the whole point of it even then. So it does require someone who is a little more experienced, usually. In some cases, perhaps they can do. But usually they do require some sort of mercy along the way. Of course, even to get the book, they required mercy also. Some devotee gave the book to them, so that way they got the mercy also. So mercy is not just one time affair, it's a continuous process. It's not just, it doesn't happen once, but it's a continual process of getting knowledge and understanding.
You know, jnanis also have knowledge,
but they're not able to conceive what it is really.
It's just because the Lord's mercy is not there for them.
Well, they have faith in Brahman only. Because they haven't got association, so therefore they don't develop faith in Bhagavan.
So Maharaj, wherever this word Jnan is mentioned, we have to see the context.
Yeah, usually it means, in our books, it means impersonal Jnana. Sometimes, though, it doesn't. It will just mean knowledge in general, like that. Knowledge is valuable for advancement, so that doesn't necessarily mean impersonal Jnana. It could mean knowledge of the Lord, knowledge of bhakti, etc. Yeah? So it will depend on the context. Usually in our works, the Jnana refers to impersonal Jnana, but it's not always like that.
When you see Maharaj in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada almost every place is translated Jnana as knowledge of the Lord.
Like,
in Bhagavad Gita, most places Prabhupada has translated knowledge as devotion of knowledge of the Lord.
Depends on the context again. So we have places where we talk about Jnana Yoga, then that is specifically the impersonal aspect. Buddha Yoga is different. That refers to bhakti in many cases, as in the ninth, Dadami Buddha Yogam Tami Namam Buyam, that's bhakti.
One has become free from the cortex, the tendency to see illusion or senses and perfect.
Ultimately, in order to get Atma Gyan, we have to be, if we want the realization of Atma, yes, we have to be free from all of that, because material senses cannot perceive Atma. Atma perceives itself. We cannot perceive the Atma with material senses and mind. So the process of achieving that, and one of them is through jnana, another is through yoga. In yoga, we stop all the functions of the mind and the senses, and all that left is atma. And in jnana, we use an intellectual process to separate body and mind and intellect from atma.
But even though we get atma jnana, it's knowledge, but yet we have to end it up, you know. That knowledge of Magdalene, but it should be taken with emotional skills.
Well, it's limited because it's only a knowledge of Atma, not knowledge of the Supreme Lord. When there's knowledge or realization of it, it's still limited because we have no knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So we have to get the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So that we cannot get by speculation. We have to accept the scriptures and the process of bhakti for that. Yeah, so if we get to that level and we don't, then we end up in impersonal Brahman, that's finished. Huh? And if we get mercy of devotees, then we can take to bhakti. Many of them won't, however. They'll just get liberation in spite of the fact that someone may give them mercy, whatever, they don't accept it, then they'll just merge into Brahman.
So Prabhupada says, one who gets liberation, they are free from the four pillars of sinful activities.
Yeah. Liberation means no mind, no intelligence, no ego, no material body. So how you can do any sinful activities? You don't have a body. You don't have a mind.
Krishna was telling Arjuna to fight, but Arjuna was there, seeing relatives on the other side, he was lamenting. Krishna said, you have such a knowledge, but you are falling into a great illusion. So he said, you are not in body, you have to realize the Atma. So he is telling Krishna, Krishna telling Arjuna.
Yeah, that's a preliminary. In other words, Krishna's strategy was to preach jnana. So that's how he first convinced him. And then he spoke karma yoga. You're not qualified for jnana, so therefore you engage in your duties. So then he taught karma yoga. And then halfway through chapter 2, and then in chapter 3, he teaches karma yoga after that. So these are only strategies to show the different processes, karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti. This is from the if the soldiers die, then they have wives without husbands, etc., and then they produce unwanted population, etc. So this means that society is disturbed by war, in other words, where people get killed, which is true. So that is a fact. So Krishna's answer is, don't be attached to the body. You're not the body. Don't worry about these things. This, of course, is not a satisfactory answer in one sense. Give up grief for your relatives because you're not the body. That you have to kill Bhishma Dev, so you're not the body, he's not the body, etc. In one sense it's true, in one sense it's also not a satisfying answer, but that's the first answer he gives. These are only strategies he's giving, just as in Krishna speaks to people of Vrindavan for Govardhan Puja. So he speaks Karmamimamsa philosophy, which is not ultimately our philosophy, but he speaks like that. Don't worship the devatas or anybody, don't worship the Supreme Lord, just do your duties and everything actually comes on its own. So he sometimes uses arguments which are not the ultimate conclusion.
Yeah, it's beautiful.